Oklahoma, what it is to be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Bidden and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation, OU Insider subscribers, Coach Brian Clinton enthusiasts, anybody who likes the color blue, apparently, because Brian and I are wearing blue shirts and pullovers. We did not plan that. Didn't plan that. Didn't even think about it until I hit the record button on this. But I hope you like blue, because there's blue everywhere. And if you like blue, then this is the podcast for you. This is another episode of the Oklahoma Drill podcast fueled by OU Insider and the Rivals Network. Brian, what's your favorite color? It better be blue.
Blue.
That's right. I didn't tell you to say that. You said that on your own. What's your favorite color?
It is red. Growing up was red. I haven't really, probably need to reassess that. I haven't thought about that in a while. It's been a while since I've been asked that question.
Well, I would say as I drink from my blue water bottle, again, this was not planned. I'm starting to see a trend here. I'm starting to see a theme. Oh man. Before we talk about all kinds of things that we need to talk about, did you watch Virginia men's basketball attempt to play basketball yesterday? Did they play basketball?
No.
Can you classify that as basketball?
No, that was something. Like they score. The Virginia basketball, you think snail's pace and defensive juggernaut, like when they won the title, what was like 2016, whenever that was. They did it to a T. That last night was just not it. That, did you see the shirts? Virginia basketball is Iowa football.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
No. And look, I'm not going to say, look, see, this is proof that Oklahoma deserved to be in. There's reasons, fair and unfair, that Oklahoma didn't make it into the NCAA tournament. But if you are an Oklahoma fan, and if you're Porter Moser, and anybody on that roster, Virginia's performance yesterday, scoring 42 points and 14 in the first half, losing by 25. Yeah, that's a gut punch on top of a gut punch. Mm. That's all I'm going to say about that. It was my eyes still hurt, and it's been about 12 hours, a little more than 12 hours since that game happened.
Has me feeling a bit blue for the Sooners.
Blue boys. That's right. We're going to do a little bit different. We're going to start this podcast a little bit different, Brian, as we talked about for people out there. Normally, we stay specifically focused to Oklahoma athletics, usually Oklahoma football, and around this time of year, Oklahoma softball. And we are going to get to both those things, especially softball. We did not get to talk about softball last week. We have plenty of softball things to talk about. But I think, and we are going to talk, this first topic we're going to talk about, I think, is going to relate to Oklahoma football. But the biggest story in college football right now, as you and I talked about, is the story with Caden Proctor, a talented offensive lineman heading into his second season. He played all of last season at Alabama, started all 14 games, I think. Yep. And a kid that grew up in Iowa, and after the season ended, he was initially committed to Iowa before flipping to Alabama the day before signing day last year. And after Nick Saban retired, he decides to enter the transfer portal, commits to Iowa, spends 2 months at Iowa, and even got some NIL money for doing a social media post for a car dealership. And then right before spring practices are about to start, he announces he's re-entering the transfer portal and we'll go back to Alabama. Now, Brian, you and I have talked about this before we recorded this, and it's been the biggest story of the spring so far in college football. And I think there's a lot of ways we can tackle this, a lot of ways we can talk about it. But just before we dive deeper, your initial reaction to hearing that a talented offensive lineman left a school, went to a new school, only to go back, or took some NIL money, only to go back to the school he was previously at, or at least that's how things are looking. What was your initial reaction to yet another transfer portal saga?
Well, it was very similar to a lot of what I saw on social media. And that's like, I mean, the entire sport is just broken right now. This is one of those situations that a 19, 20, 21-year-old kid, sometimes 18-year-old kid, they shouldn't be put in a situation where this is an option. It wasn't that long ago that I was that age, and you know, I can speak from firsthand experience. I probably didn't make the best financial decisions at that time, and had a lot to learn. And not everybody's the same. Not everybody's the same at 18, 19 years old, but for the most part, you've still got a lot to learn at that age. And I think that you can be pulled in different pulled in different directions with different incentives and things like that. And I think this really shows the need for some entity, and I don't think it's going to be the NCAA, to step in and for there to be more rules and regulations. Because let's be honest, when NIL became a thing, when the Supreme Court said, no, you cannot limit, this is not right. The NCAA cannot limit players' ability to make money off of their name, image, and likeness. NCAA got caught with its pants down. It never took the necessary precautions to prepare for something like this. They threw together something last minute because they never thought that they would lose in court, and they did. And now we have this unregulated, wild, wild west style of incentive based play, and it's going to continue to be an issue. And I think this is the poster child. This is going to be the poster child situation that I think hopefully ends up sparking some sort of debate or conversation that takes things more seriously as far as getting something changed. But yeah, I saw it and I was just, my initial thought was, this is a whole new can of worms that college football did not need.
I'll tell you this, man. So when all that came out, even just a couple of days ago, that he's going to enter the transfer portal and go back to Alabama. At first, it was interesting because I didn't even really think that much of it. I mean, I recognized that it was crazy, but there's almost a numbness that comes with
yeah,
the portal and how crazy it's gotten and how crazy it's going to continue to get. I think the thing, after reading on it more, the thing that really caught me off guard was he had already gotten some NIL money only to go back to Alabama. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that distinguishes this from me. And as crazy as, and not only going, transferring to one school only to go back to that original school, that part is crazy on its own. Then you add the context of, well, he was initially committed to Iowa before flipping to Alabama. So it's just this whole carousel all over again. It's that Iowa collective raised $100,000 in 2 days, which is not, I mean, it's a lot of money. I'm not saying it's not a lot of money. It's a lot of money. It's not a ton of money in the grand scheme of how much money is being thrown around in NIL.
Right.
Whether that's at Oklahoma or anywhere else. But it's that collective raised money to help him get here. He does one thing for NIL through a car company on social media and then just goes back. That money's gone. And that's almost the part that makes this the craziest to me, because if there's no, like, I almost don't even really, I'm not saying any criticism is fair or unfair of Caden Proctor, and I'm sure there's a lot we could talk about there, but it's, man, if we're in a situation where a kid can come to or transfer to a new school, get NIL money and go back, that opens to me. And I don't, maybe I just hadn't thought about that possibility enough. To me, oh my goodness, that opens up so many other ways all of this could go. Then you add in that this is Iowa to Alabama. This is the gold standard of college football the last 20 years, getting another win over a school like Iowa, which obviously Iowa's in the Big Ten, but they're not Alabama. It's just, that's a new thing. That's a different thing, right? It just is.
Yeah, it's concerning because not only on top of that, you also have the lawsuit right now going on about second time transfers, and who's to keep kids from jumping school to school, doing it again later in their career, and then maybe returning to a team that they're eligible with still. Like, it just, there's this entire mess of things, and the NCAA just keeps taking shot after shot whenever they go to court, and they keep losing, and there's no changes being made. Like, that's the frustrating part, is that the NCAA has made a career of sitting on their hands with all of this stuff, and now that it's getting out of hand, and now that there's nothing in place to keep the viability of this sport and roster building in place, it's almost too late at this point, right? Like, you know, there's a lot of ways. You've heard the saying, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. That's true, but the mishandling of all of this is what has caused us to get to this point. And I do think at some point down the road, what entity it is, I don't know. Maybe it's the conferences, maybe it's a new collection of schools. Somehow, some way, there will be some sort of collective bargaining agreement that brings some order back to this entire sport. But for now, it's just, yeah, this is an entirely new problem. As we spoke off air, now that we've seen a high-profile player like Caden Proctor do this, what is barring the door from other players doing the exact same thing? Well, he didn't get in trouble for that, and he was able to take the money that he made and go back to the school he really wanted to play for. Maybe I should leverage myself and do that same thing. I mean, it's, you know, it's free. Did he take that entire $100,000 and go back to Alabama? It doesn't sound like it. The collective was reassuring fans that they didn't get a cent of their money, but he still made some money off of this.
Yeah.
And it's a, was that his plan the whole time? Who knows? You'll never know if that was the plan the entire time or not. But what really I think irks me about all of it is there is no accountability. There's no accountability whatsoever for the decisions that he's making. And that's what's frustrating. Just as a former coach and being in that realm for a little while, you're one of the biggest things that you learn in football is you're accountable, your job. You have to do your job. There's 11 guys on the field at one time for your team. You have to do your job or things won't go right. There's responsibility. There is accountability. You've got to be committed to what you're doing. And, you know, just like Nick Saban said last week at the NIL roundtable on Capitol Hill, he's been teaching these principles and these lessons for 50 years, and all of it's gone out the window in the last couple of years because nobody really cares anymore about a culture. Nobody cares about that being a big part of what they're getting into. It's how much are you going to pay me? How much are you going to pay my son? How much is he worth? And I just, it really makes me sick. I mean, I don't think there's anything that would put me on a soapbox more than you know, taking away from the viability of college football. And that's, I mean, really at the end of the day, that's what NIL is doing right now.
Thank you for clarifying the $100,000 amount. I there's not really any evidence to suggest he got all that money. I think they wanted to raise that anyways, and you raise a good point. Like, to me, I almost don't really, not that I don't care. If a player or a family, if their highest priority is where they can make the most money, Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna chastise that. I'm really not. You can sure. Every situation is different, every circumstance is different, and that's usually not only the only factor, but if that's the only factor, then whatever. That's fine. That, you know, I think the thing to me is this whole thing has almost broken down the facade of commitment. And like, so for example, like I agreed with a lot of what Nick Saban said on Capitol Hill. The other side of it, though, is I think we think of someone committing to a school as a really big deal. We're finding out more and more that a commitment is really only like, there's not really anything barring to a high school kid committing somewhere, right? And Alabama, with Nick Saban in tow, took Proctor after he was already committed to Iowa mm-hmm. one day before signing day to yep. get him to Alabama. That's always been a thing. And I think we've learned more and more that commitments are like someone actually committing to a school is becoming less and less of a sure thing. And I think we've even seen that in the transfer portal too.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're taking that a step farther because he didn't just commit to Iowa through the transfer portal. He went to Iowa, enrolled in classes, took yep. NIL money, only to go back to Alabama. So if we're not already just seeing that commitments are becoming less and less of a thing, but it can go as far as actually going to that school and enrolling and that school having a reasonable assumption of building their next year's team around this kid only for him mm-hmm. to leave. That's the troubling thing for me. And look at somewhere like Oklahoma, where it's not the same thing. I'm not even trying to say it's the same thing, but Caden Green was going to be the centerpiece of Oklahoma's offensive line next year mm-hmm. and he's gone. And that's not even adding what this Caden Proctor situation has become is this is absolutely decimating to Iowa. This is a former five-star recruit, a homegrown kid.
Yep.
Who not only has walked in the door twice and left, this time even further so, enrolling in classes, only to leave again to a school like Alabama. What are these programs supposed to do in terms of roster building when this isn't just a commitment? This is he's on campus and now he's gone. That's almost the harder part to me. And this to me is we throw the word unsustainable around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
This is unsustainable. This can't happen. All it takes is a few more times for this to happen with really high caliber players, highly touted players. And college football will be completely unrecognizable. And this goes back to something that I've said before when we've talked about this stuff is that I think college football just has to lean more into being more like the NFL. I'm not saying I don't like it. Not saying it's a great thing. Not saying it's an amazing thing. I think it's the best thing to avoid. I think everybody can universally agree this is not okay if a kid can enter the portal and roll and leave and take NIL money and leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not even thinking about it from a criticizing Caden Proctor standpoint. I'm criticizing it from there's got to be a line somewhere, right? If he's, yep. I don't even all necessarily love that a kid can commit and then flip, but I understand it. This can't happen.
Right.
This can't happen. And you look at Oklahoma heading into the SEC where the highest level stuff like this is going to happen in the SEC. This just happened with Alabama. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma's now walking into, it's already bad. It's already happening. It's going to happen even more so in the SEC. How does Oklahoma protect themselves from things like this?
I think you've got to try and be one of the loudest voices in the room when it comes to this kind of stuff is the best way that you can go about it. I mean, as you pointed to just a second ago, there's not a group of people or an entity like the NFL that has had things figured out from a business perspective better than the NFL. You know, and that goes all the way out to fan engagement. Like they've got it figured out. It's a system. It is sustainable. They got it down to an art. Even their calendar. My goodness, do I wish the college football calendar would find a way to do things the way the NFL does. It's almost perfect. And with what college football coaches are having to deal with right now, I bet if we had 99% of college football coaches on this podcast and you asked them that question, they would say, yes, absolutely, we would take the NFL schedule over what they're having to do right now. Because the month of, you know, the month of December, from December to when fall camp, or when spring camp starts, it's insane. I mean, that there's no way to keep up with what's going on. So I think Oklahoma, what they've got to do to protect themselves is one, you have to just be very competitive in that market. Make sure that NIL is a very forward thinking something that you're focused on as a program. And unfortunate or not, that's probably going to put, you know, stadium upgrades and things like that on the back burner, at least for a little bit. But as you get into the SEC money and Oklahoma starts bringing in more of that revenue as part of the college football playoff and all of that stuff, I think you're going to see more and more money go towards the NIL part of things. And I think what Oklahoma can maybe offer that some other programs might not be able to is if they continue to be competitive in that market and you add the culture side of things, the, you know, the focus on what you can do for players after football, you know, with all the programs that Oklahoma uses in Norman, I think that that is something that could be a really dynamic duo as far as recruiting goes. But yeah, I mean, I think unfortunately until things change, the days of selling culture and all of that are pretty much over until we see some big changes made, you know, at the power level where whoever's making decisions finally puts a stop to what's going on.
That's almost the disappointing part for me, is even looking at someone like Brent Venables, who I think has, while there have been real efforts to integrate not only NIL into everything they're doing, but also to stay adept and current with the way that college football is growing and changing. But the first and foremost selling point has continued to be the culture and OU DNA and all those buzzwords that I think most of the time would be buzzwords, but I think is genuine from Brent Venables. I think it puts coaches in a really tough spot until there is a something that ties NIL money to contracts or tightens up restrictions and regulations in the transfer portal. Until any of that stuff happens, I think it puts coaches in a tough spot to where, how do you maintain the integrity of what you want your program to be while recognizing it's possible that that's going to result in shortcomings, that's going to result in not getting kids that you need to be competitive on campus? How do you go about reconciling that? And you want programs to be unique. You want programs to be individualistic. Not that there can't be similarities between different programs, but I think you want each program to be a unique feel. But if everything starts boiling down to how much money can you offer me, that's not even to criticize the players. I think that's just, it's turning college football into something that's unrecognizable. So at that point, I think you either, I don't even know what the answer is, but I think there are so many things that await Brent Venables in Oklahoma in the SEC. I mean, the biggest thing is putting the transfer portal and NIL on steroids, because that's what it's going to be in the SEC. And I think Brent Venables having to navigate that is going to be, not that he can't, not that this program can't, or that they won't, or that they won't have a ton of success, but that's going to be the thing, I think, more than anything, to monitor.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, because it you know, from everything, he's a principles-based guy, just like Nick Saban. I mean, you've heard those comparisons from former guys, Thad Turnipseed, former guy on the staff with Oklahoma, compared those two in an interview. I mean, they're very process-oriented guys, and with this whole entire change and entire landscape overhaul of what we've seen in college football, I think, yeah, it's going to be difficult. I would venture to say that might be the most challenging aspect of Brent Venables' tenure going forward is handling that the right way.
There's so much more we could talk about with this, good Lord, we could do a series of podcasts on not only Caden Proctor specifically, but the the college football landscape.
Real quick, before we go on to the next thing, wasn't there a kid named, was it Keontae Bradford, maybe, from LSU that transferred to Oklahoma and then back to LSU and it's like in the span of a week?
Yeah.
Like, this is just like, that was weird, but this, with it happening for 2 months, and then it's just insane where we've come and what's the norm, what we're numb to. Just odd. Just a intrusive thought there. But
hell, not to mention Jaden Nickens, who just decommitted from Oklahoma, who during the year helped Millwood's football program only to go to Douglas and help Douglas win a basketball state championship. Yeah. And looks like he's going to be entering the high school, or transferring in high school again. We keep on saying this, but this is only the beginning. And I think at some point, and I do think Jaden Nickens' decommitment, I think that's part of why he decommitted. And I do think it was mutual from both parties, is that it just wasn't going to be a good culture fit.
Right.
So there's so much we could talk about, man. But before we talk about anything else, you want to hear a shout out for something that I've been wanting to talk about for a little bit?
Let's hear it.
I want to talk about our sponsor today, our sponsor Manscaped. And this whole episode brought to you by the spring cleaning champions, Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and the drapes with the leaders in below the waist grooming. Clear out that winter bush with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0. Watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Embrace the season and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our special offer. Go to manscaped.com, use the code OUINSIDER for 20% off plus free shipping. After using Manscaped, I can finally say I've caught the spring fever. Their fifth generation trimmer features two interchangeable next gen skin safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Again, get 20% off and free shipping with the code OUINSIDER at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code OUINSIDER at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. That was what I just had to get that off my chest. Had to get it off my chest. Brian, OU spring football has been underway it started last week. They are on spring break this week, so nothing on the field going on, but that will resume next week. And we didn't get to attend an open practice last week, which was a little unusual, but fully expect to get to attend at least one or two open practices next week. In addition to talking to some players, we talked to a bunch of newcomers a couple of weeks ago, but we'll get to talk to some more established players, I think, on the roster next week. Brian, there's a lot of things I'm going to be looking for. Hopefully it's another 40 to 45 minute session that we've gotten in the past, because you really get to see a lot. You get to see a lot of different things. You get to take note of a lot of different things. I'm really curious to see, first of all, one thing that we haven't really talked about a lot is that quarterback room. Because Jackson Arnold is going to be the starter next season. Haven't talked a lot about that quarterback room, but there's a lot of buzz about Michael Bogunowski, man.
Mike Hawkins.
Oh my God. Hawkins. Mike Hawkins.
Okay. But yeah, you're good though. Yes.
Mike Hawkins. I'm so sorry to the young guys for mixing. I think I might be the first person that's ever mixed up both those guys. Gosh, Mike Hawkins. This is when you don't take notes, I can't just trust my brain. Because
I got you.
You know, thank you. Mike Hawkins, there's a lot of buzz about Mike Hawkins, man. And I think that is underrated for a lot of reasons. For one, that backup quarterback spot, the quarterback depth in that room has not been amazing the last couple of years, especially under Brent Venables. Even with Jackson Arnold in tow last year, while he's a highly touted, you know, guy, he was a true freshman, you know, so you, you know, that I think they've really worked on the depth in that quarterback room. But Michael Hawkins, man, I think he has really showed out in spring football to enough to where Parker Thune, our colleague, noted on our board last week, and he put it really, really well, that I think there's been at times that he and Jackson Arnold have looked almost even, and they've both been really, really impressive. Now, again, Jackson Arnold is going to be the starter. There's no reason to think anything otherwise, but Michael Hawkins is the real deal, man. If he's somebody that looks like could be provide real depth and real talent in that room, that's huge. I'm going to be curious to watch them next week. I want to see Michael Hawkins in an OU practice jersey on the field throwing. That's one thing I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I have heard from several people that, I mean, as far as an athletic standpoint, from a total athletic standpoint in that quarterback room, that Hawkins is probably the top guy in there. Like, even with what you see from Jackson Arnold, arm talent wise, Hawkins brings it all. Like, I mean, that guy, I guess he's got the speed, he's got the moves, obviously has the arm talent. His throwing motion, at least in high school, was something a lot of people seem to really move away from or didn't like. But I mean, there was no issues with velocity or anything like that. So this is a guy that can really spin it, and I'm excited about what he brings, but also what Casey Thompson brings to the room from an experience perspective, I think is just so, so valuable, especially when you lose a guy as experienced as Dylan Gabriel from that room. You know, I would say, you know, I don't have notes in front of me, but I would venture to say that Gabriel and Casey Thompson are probably two of the most experienced players in all of college football. So for you to be able to take a guy like Thompson and bring him into the room and really allow him to help mold those younger guys and help them with scheme recognition, help them with, you know, diagnosing what a defense is trying to do on the whiteboard, all of that stuff. I think that's super valuable and is something that's really underrated. You know, it's valuable for Jackson Arnold because, one, he had everything that he was taking in from Dylan Gabriel last year, but now he has the very unique opportunity to go from one guy who's played so much football to another guy who is playing his sixth or seventh year of football. And so you have a perspective from two different players in two totally different schemes throughout their careers and two journeymen that you get to really learn from. So I think it's great for Arnold. It's great for his development. And then obviously with what Hawkins brings I think Parker would get on to both of us if we didn't bring up Brandon Zerbrook and what he brings to the room as well. You know, there's a lot of competitive depth in that quarterback room, and really like where it's headed. I'm excited to see what it looks like though in spring ball, and then obviously in the spring game. You know, we won't just see Jackson Arnold throwing it around out there. We're going to see other guys as well. So it'll be exciting to see what those young ones can bring in.
Glad you mentioned Zerbrug, obviously, and then you add Casey Thompson on top of it. But I don't expect Casey Thompson to do much in the spring.
Yeah,
you know, he's still dealing with an injury, which adds opportunities to Hawkins and Zerbrug to I think really battle it out for that backup quarterback spot. This is a huge opportunity for both of them. I was thinking about Boganowski because I was thinking about that secondary room as a whole, and or that secondary group as a whole. I think that's going to be interesting. I think he has really impressed people, and I do think that's interesting from a standpoint of, you know, if Billy Bowman and Peyton Bowen are your presumed starters at safety heading into next year, what does the depth look like behind them? Is it, you know, is Robert Spears Jennings getting a lot of play? Could a freshman like Boganowski step into the mix? I think that's going to be interesting. I also think it's going to be interesting because we're hearing a lot about different guys trying out at Cheetah or moving inside, especially in that secondary room. And we saw Kendall Dolby do that a little bit last year. We saw Peyton Bowen do that a little bit last year. We've heard a little bit about Woody Washington doing that too. I've had a couple of people mention that to me, how realistic that is. And I don't know about you, Brian. I'm not saying it's not realistic, but considering Woody Washington's veteran presence, how long he's played at corner, at Oklahoma, I don't know if I really see it that much, especially if Desaun McCullough and Justin Harrington are healthy. Having said that, I mean, that cornerback room, what if, you know, a couple of the transfer guys that they brought in, whether that's Malaska from Utah or that's Malone from San Diego State, those guys have experience. What if, mm-hmm. I mean, what if they make such an impression at cornerback that they give Woody Washington a look at Cheetah and that proves to be a good look for them? Not to mention, if Gentry Williams can stay healthy. So I don't know how much stock I put into that, but I do think it's going to be interesting in individual drills to see our guys like Woody Washington moving around a little bit more than we would expect them to. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think it's it's a very interesting situation, because to me, what it says is if they are truly moving him to play more of a nickel role, one, having somebody that's as experienced as he is on the field still is great. You want any way that you can keep him on the field, you want to be able to do that. But I think the biggest thing that I take away from it is if this truly is something that Brent Venables and Zach Alley are wanting to do, it tells me that the athletes on the outside that they have built up and the guys that they have in that room now, they feel really good about it. Because, you know, we have heard things about Makari Vickers. We have heard things about Jacoby Johnson being just like a next level athlete. And when you add guys like Malone and Malaska, as you said, when you have a healthy Gentry Williams, that room really starts to get deep quickly. Kendall Dolby, again, a guy that we've seen flashes from last year, maybe those athletes, because, Woody Washington, I think if there's any, I'm not even really going to call it a knock, but maybe his ceiling is limited with some of the speed that you want at corner. Maybe he does fit that role at nickel a little bit better if you can get better raw athletes out on the field. Corner is an easier position to play from an experience standpoint. And from a scheme standpoint, it's a lot easier position to play than somebody. The further inside you get in the secondary, the harder the position is to play. There's more responsibilities. There's more things that you have to know about lining up and where guys need to be and what your job is versus what the other guy's job is. Those guys outside, there's a little more. There's a little more fluidity to what can happen. You know, you are able to make plays on the ball just instinctually. And you may not get burned as much. You may not be out of position as much. And so I think that if you have a guy like Woody Washington that does move inside and you have some really good athletes on the outside, you feel like it brings your entire defense up as a whole, then, great. I think that's awesome. But yeah, it is odd to think about Woody Washington playing anywhere else but corner, because, I mean, that's just what we've seen him do for so long at Oklahoma. So, I'm not saying that it's not, that it's not wrong or that it's not right, I guess is the better way of putting that. But, it is interesting. It's interesting to see that they are experimenting with some things. And, I'm interested to see how it plays out.
No, absolutely. And I think if we've learned anything about this coaching staff, it's going to be, they really prioritize versatility. And I think in the SEC, I don't think you can be afraid to be creative and find different things that work. So I think we'll have a little bit more to talk about next week after we attend an open practice or two and really get a sense of what's going on over at Oklahoma Memorial Stadium. Brian, we didn't get to talk about softball last week. We promised we would talk about some softball this week just to wrap things up here. And Brian, I think last weekend was a decent weekend for them. They went to Texas Tech, and just beat them casually 40-3, excuse me, across the three games. So some real barn burners that came down to the wire over in Lubbock. But no, seriously, I think it was not only what you come to expect, but I thought it was really impressive for Oklahoma to hold a Texas Tech team that was averaging over 7 runs per game. They're in the top 15 in scoring nationally. They held them to 3 runs total. Thought OU's pitching staff really, really delivered. The defense was incredible. And then obviously the bats. I don't think the bats, obviously OU scored a lot of runs. I wouldn't have said it was the most consistent weekend, but it was one of the most explosive. And you think about the 12 runs they scored in the first game against, or in the second game in the first inning. And all 12 of those runs came with zero outs on the board. It was just insane. I was watching that game from home thinking, what am I watching? What is this? Anything stand out to you overall just about last weekend?
Yeah. So first off, Sydney Sanders just continues. I mean, it's nuts what we've seen her, do. I believe she leads the team now.
Walks.
And walks and on base, plus, an OPS, she's 1.599. I'm looking at here.
Slugging
percentage. She leads the team. She's 1.020. I mean, she's been incredible but it hasn't been just her. I think what's awesome is that, you know, typically, especially because we're, as crazy as it sounds, we're about midway through the year already. And, you know, typically this is where you start to see stats, you know, from a team perspective, start to fall down and fall to the medium. You know, we see the range kind of close in and stats start to come back towards the medium. But Oklahoma's batting average and their batting statistics are rising, and they're consistently starting to rise. You know, they're at 394 as a team now batting, and it just continues to get better and better. What I like is, you know, it wasn't that long ago that I believe Cassidy Pickering was the only player on the team batting over 400, and now that group is six deep, just as far as players who are batting on a consistent basis. So yeah, this is a team that I think is starting to figure some things out offensively. And then the pitching staff last year, I think it's hard to compare last year because you had such an incredible talent in Jordy Ball. But what the pitching staff has done has still been the backbone of this team. Like, they've still, despite a couple of games, you know, I think the outliers there obviously are against Miami, Ohio, who, by the way, leads the country in several offensive statistics. Very, very good team. But outside of that game and maybe against Liberty, they've been dominant again. And they're 1.26 team ERA. They're allowing a batting average of 1.18. So, you know, I think really the team has found a way to be more balanced as the season's gone on. That offense doesn't necessarily seem, it's crazy, right, that we're saying that the offense was an issue. They were still run ruling teams, but it was more like 8-0. Now you're seeing those 13, 14 spots start to be put up, and the offense is starting to click a little bit more. So the pitching and the defense has been outstanding, and I think the offense is coming around, and now I think you're starting to see some confidence built with this team, and it feels like they're playing a lot more loose now. I think that streak being gone is certainly helping, you know, at least from my perspective, for this team to play more loosely. And I think that's only a good thing from here on out.
I think the biggest thing for me through two weekends is we're really starting to get some clarity on that pitching staff as a whole in terms of what the kind of hierarchy is. Through six conference games or two series, it's been Kelly Maxwell. Kelly Maxwell started both game ones in both series. And then it's Kirsten Deal and Nicole May getting the starts in the other two games. Those three have started all six games, with Carly Keeney, who has been good this year, but I think Carly Keeney has been playing more of that relief pitcher role. She came in relief, I think, in game two and game three last weekend. So not that anything is set in stone, but I think we're seeing who the top three in this pitching staff is, with Carly Keeney as a really solid relief pitcher that can kind of come in. I mean, because otherwise, Carly Keeney has pitched more innings than Kirsten Dill on the year by a little over two. But Kirsten Deal started 7 games. Kelly Maxwell started 8. Nicole May has started 10. Everybody else is combined for 3. And, you know, I don't think we're going to see a ton of S.J. Guerin the rest of the year. I think Peyton Monticelli has been good, but I just don't know. I mean, she's only pitched 12 innings on the year. I don't know how much we're going to see her. I think we've seen what this top three is. It's Kelly Maxwell is the ace Kelly Maxwell is the ace with Nicole May and Kirsten Deal as the number 2 and number 3. I'm going to bring up, so Patty Gasso spoke yesterday before OU actually plays tonight against UC Arlington. I will be there. I'm comfortable that nothing about this conversation is going to change based on what happens against UC Arlington tonight, but I will be there to cover that game. Patty was asked, I asked her about Kirsten Deal, and she was also asked about Nicole May, who I think has faced some criticism, not only through her OU career, but especially this year, because Nicole May's stats are really, really, really good. ERA of 1.54. She's allowing a batting average of 0.205. She's only given up 9 earned runs in 41 innings. So she's been really, really, really good, but she's had some games where she's given up a couple of hits every now and then. I wanted to read you her comment about Nicole May that I thought was really, really interesting. If I can actually pull it up for once. Oh my goodness. This has not been the most prepared I've ever been. I can say that. Nicole May. I think sometimes people panic because she gives up a ground ball up the middle. I mean, she's getting us out. She's getting us wins. She's keeping the opponent from scoring, so it's not always about getting strikeouts. Our defense is really good, so if you can get us fly balls and just these ground balls for us, we know how to get out of innings. If we give up a score, we know how to rebound and come back hard. If a pitcher gives up a home run, we know how to pick you up. So she's doing everything we need and more. I've been very, very pleased. That was pretty purposeful from Patty. I think she's seen some of the Nicole May criticism out there. Now, I do think Kelly Maxwell has been the best pitcher on this team, and I think Kirsten Deal actually over the last few weeks has been the second best pitcher. Mm-hmm. Having said that, if Nicole May is at worst your third best pitcher, I think a lot of teams would take her as their third best pitcher, right? And she's probably their second, but Kirsten Deal has been incredible the last few weeks. But either way, Patty Gasso got a little fired up. I even asked her about Kirsten Deal, and she kind of turned that into people. She's like, it's so crazy that some people will freak out when we give up a run or two. And yeah, they gave up 3 runs combined last week into a team that was averaging over 7 a game. It's interesting to see Patty get fired up every now and then. And it was specifically interesting to see her get fired up about Nicole May, who I think has been not quite as good as she was last year, but still really, really good.
Right. Well, and I mean, here's the thing. Like, a lot of this criticism from the fan base, it's a product of the success that Oklahoma's had. Like, I mean, you get spoiled as a fan base from watching. I mean, Patty Gasso, regardless of sport, is the first coach in Big 12 history to win 400 games in conference play of any sport. That, I mean, there, that it, it's unprecedented success, and you don't get to this point of being successful without knowing exactly what you're doing, who you're developing, and what's going on. And, you know, I do think that the panic of, oh my goodness, they just gave up a home run, it's because it doesn't happen very often. And, you know, Oklahoma's given up 13 home runs this year. And they've given up a total of 36 runs total through
28 games.
How many games? I mean, guys, this team is incredible. Once again, they're rounding into shape, rounding into form. And as you just said, like, any team, I would venture to say right now, any team in the country would take Nicole May as their number 3 pitcher in a heartbeat. No question. And I think that's not just a pat on the back for the girls ahead of her, but for her as well. I mean, this is somebody who statistically she's had an incredible career at Oklahoma, and she's been a big part of the group that has maintained the level of success that Oklahoma's seen over the last several years. And so, yeah, I mean, she deserves her flowers, and I commend Patty for standing up for her in that situation. And, you know, Patty would do that for any girl on her team. That's just who she is. But Nicole May, especially with some of the criticism she's taken over the years, I think that was a great spot for Patty to do that. And I certainly agree with her.
I think the other thing noteworthy to mention, I'll mention real quickly about the pitching staff. I don't expect anything to really change. I think it's going to be that top three of Deal, Maxwell, and May moving forward. But they do play Baylor this weekend for a three-game series. The first game will be at USA Hall of Fame Stadium. It's something that they've done the last couple of years. They did it for the first game of the Texas series last year. But anyways, I don't expect anything to change, but it is something to monitor moving forward, how they play those three. Kelly Maxwell's gotten a few games recently where she's gone all seven. So that's been interesting. Something to monitor. I think the other thing to mention is Patty Gasso did mention that Kinzie Hansen will be out, or she's day to day. Sorry, that's what she's day to day with a tweak in her knee. It was an injury that she only had one at bat all of last week against Texas Tech. It was a home run because that's what Kinzie Hansen does. And then she didn't play the rest of the game. It was Riley Ludlum taking her place, not only at catcher, but also in the lineup. You know, Patty made sure to mention that, like, she's not like she's out for the season or anything. They're just being really, really cautious. But she did say, I mean, they're being really cautious. I would expect, I mean, there's no way Kinzie Hansen plays tonight. I would be surprised if she plays that much, if at all, against Baylor this weekend. And I think not only because they want to be really cautious because Kinzie Hansen is really, really important to this team, but also I think it's because Riley Ludlum has been a very, very solid backup option, both defensively and at the plate. I mean, she's been really good. She's batting 385. She's got a slug percentage of 564, on base percentage of 528. She was walked 8 times last weekend. 8 across 3 games. Just insanity. I think that gives them some stability, and not only stability, but I think they want to get her reps. I do think it's not out of the question that there's a game in the postseason where she ends up playing a huge role, if not more than one game.
Yeah.
I thought it was also interesting that they said that if something happened to Riley Ludlum and Kinzie Hansen wasn't available, that Alina Torres would be the third string backup pitcher. So not that she can't do it, but I think they're hoping it doesn't come to that.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, obviously you want to have Kinzie Hansen to be at full strength, but I think at least for the next couple of weeks, you know, we'll see when she comes back. I think Oklahoma can manage her absence. I think Riley Ludlum's been good. And I mean, you want her back, but I don't know. I think Oklahoma can withstand her absence.
I agree. And I think that this is a really good time for caution with what's going on with Kinzie, because I mean, there's no way around it. Kinzie Hansen's the best catcher in softball right now, in college softball. I mean, she's an All-American. What she does at the plate changes the way Oklahoma's offense operates. And you know, Baylor's coming off of a sweep at the hands of Kansas, which just sounds very odd for me to say, but you host Baylor, and then you have a trip to Lawrence to face that same Kansas team, and then you go to Austin, and you've got to face you know, the number two team in the country in Texas. So that's what's coming up the next couple of weeks. I think right now is the perfect time to get Kinzie healthy. But also, as you said, it's a double-edged sword, because you're also getting Riley Ludlum very, very quality reps. And I think that you're going to need both of those girls fully ready to go whenever that two-weekend road stretch comes up. Because, you know, Kansas is one of four teams in the Big 12 to have a winning record in conference play right now. And, you know, obviously the other three are OU, Oklahoma State, and Texas. So you know, that stretch right there kind of looks like maybe the most difficult of Oklahoma's regular season. And you definitely want the person behind the plate feeling comfortable and feeling close to 100%. And I think that playing Riley Ludlum up until that is going to be probably the best way of making sure both of those players are ready to go.
And I'm really excited for that Austin trip. I'm officially going. I'm going for that weekend series. I'm very, very excited. And what should be a battle between two of the top ranked teams in the country. So that'll be fun. Maybe. We should definitely talk about that. But absolutely. I think, we'll see what happens to UT Arlington tonight. People who are listening to this will already know what happens by tomorrow. But Baylor series should be fun. And I think there's still plenty to watch with how good Ella Parker and Cassidy Pickering have done. Jada Coleman's back to form. Any concerns about her early season struggles are way out the window. It should be fun. OU's 27-1. Number one, or back at number one where they belong until they are permanently knocked off. And other than that, it's been a fun and interesting season for OU softball so far. Any other thoughts about this weekend before we head out of here?
Is worth noting that Tulsa 918 represent. Yeah. Knocked off Oklahoma State last night, which
was
I
it two
was
to nothing?
Three nothing.
Three nothing.
Yeah, and the final two runs in the sixth were scored on a throwing or on a fielding error from their third baseman. So just a tough game. I mean, Oklahoma State every once in a while seems to have that struggle, but that team is still very good. Lexi Kilfoyle and Ivy Rosenberry are going to be two players to watch in the circle for them. But as far as Oklahoma goes, going into the weekend, Baylor, I think honestly, Baylor has the horses to be a Women's College World Series team. But unfortunately, since everything happened with Mackenzie Wilson and her arrest, it just the feeling of that team just hasn't been necessarily the same. And I think that that's going to, be something that they're going to have to find a way to weather that storm and move forward if they want to get into the postseason. 1-5 in Big 12 play is just not going to do it. So, don't overlook Baylor. Obviously, everybody knows what they're capable of. And, I think Oklahoma just needs to go into this one focused and take care of business and get ready for Lawrence.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And with that, we are going to wrap up this episode of the Oklahoma Drill. You guys know the drill. We have new episodes every single Thursday here on our OU Insider YouTube channel. Make sure to like and subscribe or anywhere that you find your podcasts. If you are not a VIP member over at OUinsider.com, why? Again, it's like the fourth week in a row that we've asked that. Why? Why are you not a VIP member over at OUinsider.com? Plenty of stuff still happening. We'll really get in the thick of OU spring football next week. Basketball season is over for the men's team, but not the women's team, who are playing in the NCAA tournament this weekend. We'll have coverage about that. And of course, softball is continuing this weekend and for the next several weeks. Plenty of stuff you're not going to want to miss, both over at OUinsider.com and here at this OU Insider YouTube channel. Make sure to stay up to date on all things OU athletics. And until then, we will see you next week for another episode of the Oklahoma Drill.